For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
Greg Brown joins us right now. And Greg, it seems like in some respects, Andrew McCutchen would actually agree with that assessment of things.
Yeah. It's been interesting that, I think Shelton's trying to find some formula that can boost this offense.
But why does the formula include sitting some of their best hitters as often as it has?
Well, yeah, I don't know as often as I heard some suggestions over the weekend. For example, I think we have to take into account who, now I've not asked anybody this, but it seems like, for example, I heard some criticism regarding Henry Davis catching on Saturday rather than Bart, I believe is what I heard.
Okay.
And so it seems to me, again, I've not asked Skeens this, but it seems to me that Skeens is comfortable with Davis, just like he was comfortable with Andy Rodriguez. And if, it's a big IF, I'm not saying this is the case, but if indeed Paul Skeens wants whoever it is behind the plate to catch him, if you're the manager, you would certainly, I would anyway, I think you guys would too, Skeens wants this guy to catch him, he's catching him.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, so we agree there. In terms of other players that weren't in the lineup in particular, the Andrew McCutchen stuff, I think, you know, we have to talk to Andrew and Shelton, and I've not done that yet. There seems to be a disconnect in that respect. It seems to me, I read a quote from Andrew that said something about how he was available to pinch hit the other day, but wasn't ready to play the outfield. I think that's pretty close to what he said. You guys can correct me. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So what is it? Now, maybe Andrew wasn't feeling 100%, and maybe that's why. A lot of these times, I think we touched on this last week, a lot of times these managers over the years, believe me, I've listened to it, I've seen it, I've heard, I've criticized, and I've gotten my hand slapped over the years because, stupid me, I didn't check with a player or a manager before the game, before I make the criticism. I remember one time, many, many years ago, I'm old enough to remember when John Candelari was a player and when pitchers batted. And I remember one game at Three River Stadium where Candelari hit like a ground ball to shortstop and he was barely jogging to first base. And the place just booed the living daylights out of Candelaria. And after the game, Chuck Tanner got really angry. He says, you know, sometimes media and fans don't understand, but Candelaria has been nursing a tight hamstring. And I told him before the game, you know, you hit the ball, you jog to first base. And that's what he was doing. That happens so many times behind closed doors, and we're unaware of this. So it's possible, I think, that McCutchen went to Shelton and said, listen, I'm not 100%. You know, I could use a day off. I could pinch hit, but I can't play the outfield. That stuff happens so often. And I'm not, you know, Shelton, the Pirates aren't blameless because stuff happens. I don't understand the Canario pinch hit. That didn't make sense to me. I think what they could have done in the McCutcheon pinch hit scenario, because I heard Shelty say something after the game about how he'd have to make two moves for one if he had pinch hit McCutcheon. In that instance, that was when Cruz was DHing. If you need to, just put Cruz back in center field. It's late in the game. Just because you have Cruz in the DH, he's not locked to that spot. You can put him in center field. You'll just have to pinch hit for the pitcher, which you're going to do anyway, you know, late in the ball game. So just a lot of moving parts. And this is what happens, boy, when a team struggles, you know, you're looking at all, fingers are pointed everywhere, and I understand it.
Brownie, I was a little bit removed from what the Pirates are doing. I was following on my phone to check, you know, the scores and what have you against Cleveland. I was actually at the home of their AAA affiliate in the late 90s, early aughts, the Nashville Sounds. I was down there. Looked like a very beautiful ballpark that they had built in Nashville. But I cannot help but look at one person in particular who went 0 for the series against Cleveland and struck out four times in the first game of that one. Here we are again with Jack Sawinski, and it just does not feel I mean this. I do not want to pile on the guy. I think he's trying hard, maybe too hard. It can't go much longer. I see Donnie Football and others tweeting, like, how much longer are we going to keep running the Jack Sawinski experiment? Do you think the Pirates are feeling somewhat of the same about him, that they might need to make a move here, to do something with him?
I mean, I imagine they are. I think they probably feel the same way. I think we also have to keep in mind, if we think that those guys behind closed doors aren't trying to desperately find something
I know he is. I know he is trying to jumpstart.
No, I'm not suggesting you are.
Nothing seems to be working with him.
Yeah, the general we. They're looking for anything that will get this offense going. They're trying to win. And the conundrum, I think, for the Pirates is, do you keep running Sawinski out there, like some might suggest, throw him out there for a week against every pitcher for at least a week and see what happens? When you are struggling as he is playing sporadically, an occasional start, what, once every 4 or 5 days or so, rarely back-to-back starts.
Isn't that the whole team just about? I mean, everyone's sporadic. The whole squad seems sporadic to me. Greg, that's part of the problem.
Because none of them are hitting on
a regular
basis.
It seems to me that regular guy, IKF plays every day. I think Frazier plays about every day. Pham plays about every day. Reynolds plays every day. Hayes plays about every day. But there are some, that move around. And you've got to, you got to make a decision. And I don't know what their reasoning is behind playing him some days. I'm sure it has something to do with matchups. They look at, what that pitcher, what he features. What might Sawinski be able to hit? Same way with these other guys. I mean, there are a lot of metrics and so on. But in terms of Sawinski specifically, I think they maybe they're at a crossroads with them. And I agree with you 100%, because it certainly isn't for lack of trying that he wants so badly to perform to his fault it's like the weight of the world is on his shoulders at times. And rather than just going out there and relaxing, and that's when this idea comes into my mind, hey, Jack, we're putting you out there every day. I mean, maybe you say that, we're putting you out there every day in left field, and you say to Tommy Pham, who's been struggling, Tommy, you're a veteran, you're going to sit for a week, we're going to need you to pinch hit. Maybe that's what you do. I don't know. And then the other option, I'm sure, is they've got to be considering, do we make a move? Do we get him out of here, get him back down to the minor leagues and let him play every single day and get hot, then bring him up? I don't know. A lot of stuff going on.
Greg, what did you make of Skeens' comments? I liked him a lot when he said, look, friendships and positive vibes don't win championships. I mean, I'd like to infer from that he's hoping that there's maybe some more tough love and accountability that goes on, and not just, hey, we'll get him tomorrow or everything's cool and copacetic, even though we're in last place and currently one of the worst teams in baseball.
Andrew, I could have written that for him. You and I and Chris have talked about this over the years. I've said this forever. It goes with the whole thing about clubhouse culture and atmosphere, and the guys get along and how great this is. That's bunk. I don't want guys getting along and happy when the team is losing. I want misery. And I think that's kind of what Skeens is saying. Like, So what? Yeah, we all get along. That's not going to win you games because you all get along. I've heard that forever. We've got a great – I hear it all the time. When the team starts to win, not just this team, but any team, and baseball or sports for that matter, man, we have a great locker room, great clubhouse. How often do you hear that when the team is losing? I don't, and I prefer it that way. I don't want guys, like I said, I don't want all patting each other on the back and all happy. And I want Kathy Bates' locker rooms, clubhouses, misery.
Man. I didn't think we'd get that kind of a reference. I hope they're – you know what? She could teach him how to swing a bat right now from that movie.
Yeah. He sure could.
I'd like Shelty to inflict some of that punishment on his guys who keep making outs on the bases, specifically at third base.
Oh, man. It's so frustrating. And it happened back-to-back games. And
Reynolds,
these are guys that
– and Valdez.
And it's not – again, it's not for lack of trying. And I think Valdez – that's what happens when you get caught up, I think, when you're struggling to find something. And here's Valdez. Great guy. Hard work. I mean, and we talked about this a week or two ago. Talked about this guy's got some pop. I said it, Andrew. I think you questioned it.
Oh, I definitely mocked it. I still mock it to some extent.
Okay, but we're seeing it. We're seeing what this guy's got. This guy has a clue when he's at home plate. You can see that. But when he's rounding second down 3-0 in the ninth inning, in his mind, he gets caught up in the excitement. Oh, I'm going to try and do something special instead of stop. There's no reason to move another 90 feet. And then we get caught up in this umpire, and I think he made a mistake. You know, my goodness, the guy, obviously something happened. The play seemed to be over. Why in the world in fact, the umpire looked like he was about ready to call time. It looked like his arms were moving. And then Ramirez, again, how smart that guy is, one of the great players in baseball, Jose Ramirez, doesn't give up himself. He's standing right there, slaps a tag on Valdez. But the bottom line, Valdez and the Pirates should never have been in that situation. Brian Reynolds the night before gets thrown out at third base on the double by Valdez off the wall and left. The same thing. And it snowballs when you're losing. And, you know, they need to get out of the funk. They need to get on a run. And, boy, no better time than to do it on the West Coast when you're looking at this the next two series against the Angels and certainly the Dodgers, formidable foes, and
it's put up or shut up time right now, Brownie. You talked about you want misery when things aren't going well. It's either about to get a lot more miserable or they're about to snap out of it.
I agree. Yeah, this is it. I mean, it's time to put up or shut up, and I think the players know it. Everybody feels it. You know, go out there and win some ball games, and you'll feel a whole lot better about things.
Greg Brown, check him out in L.A., the Pirates and Angels tonight. Bailey Falter on the mound. Thank you, Greg.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Founded in 1964, Fremont Bank understands the difference 60 years can make. It's the difference between serving a family business and being dedicated to a family business as a family business. The difference between looking at spreadsheets and looking at possibilities. The difference between deposits that go into a vault and deposits that go back into your community. So what difference does 60 years make? All the difference in the world. Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Thank you, guys.
There's breaking Steelers news. They've made a roster move or a signing. We'll tell you about that coming up in a few minutes. 4:15 on Tuesdays for the last couple of months has meant time spent with our draft guru, Ryan Wilson, Carnegie Mellon Educated, CBSSports.com, his great podcast over on the Odyssey app, CBSSports.com, where he talks draft 365. That's such a great job. Rick Spielman, his old host, and him really were just a tremendous duo. And Ryan's still going strong, even though Rick has gotten back into the NFL. All right, we're 2 days out. So a lot of the speculation will ramp up a little bit longer, and then we'll have the pick probably around, 10:30 Thursday night, somewhere in that range, maybe closer to 11.
Yeah, I feel like in that 9:55, it's never moving fast enough. It's always after 10. I feel like 10 to 10:30.
Ryan, right now, your crystal ball says the Steelers will pick who in the first round?
Shador is where I'm leaning. Kenneth Grant makes sense, the defensive tackle from Michigan. But I think if Shador is there, and man, it feels like he's going to be, that might be the path we're going down. And I can't see you guys, but I can imagine what your faces look like
now. I'm scrolling down the mock draft homepage on CBSSports.com where everybody's mocks are compiled.
Oh, it's almost
horrifying.
In unison.
It's horrifying.
To you it is. You're not a big fan of the Shador Sanders pick. I'm way more open-minded
about
it than you.
One of the only picks that's – well, another one's Amarian Hampton, which I would not really like at all. And then one of them's even worse than Sanders. It's Jackson Dart.
Oh, my God.
I can assuage some concerns for you. Jackson Dart's not going in the first round, from what
he's
I understand.
He's not going to that. He's not going to be in the green room anymore, so it looks like his agent's insane campaign to gas him up has finally run out of steam.
Yeah, I won't speak to that. But
I've just been hearing from people that the agent was working overtime there to put him up, but I've heard the same things as you, that he's not okay. A first-round guy anymore.
So don't burn any calories getting angry about that on the mock draft machine there. But Shador feels like a reality, and I think some people in that building who have a lot of pull, who we know who he is, they like Shador, and I get that. And this may not make you feel better or the listeners, but I feel much better about Shador than I did about Kenny Pickett when he was drafted 20th overall.
Tell us why, because today Mike described Shador very similarly to the way he talked about Kenny, with intangibles and
competitive
spirit,
toughness,
and things like that.
That stuff. Yep. Nothing about the stuff he actually does well tangibly.
Coming out, I had questions about Kenny Pickett's ability to throw on time and to get through his reads. I think Shador is he's a smart player, number one. He doesn't turn the ball over, number two. And the two things he didn't have at Colorado, a run game, like non-existent run game, and an offensive line. Now, we can have conversations about what this offensive line is going to look like in Pittsburgh. You would hope that they're younger, get Palatano back, they can have an opportunity to be better. We shall see. But at least Arthur Smith will provide a young quarterback, whoever it is, with a run game and a defense. And again, we need a defensive tackle if you're in Pittsburgh in that draft room. So that's also a point of conversation. But I think given that, the other thing that I keep coming back to, and Kenny Pickett was afforded the ability to sit for a little bit too, the head Mr. Trubisky at the time, Aaron Rodgers or whoever it is, you would imagine that Shador is not going to start right away. And we live in a world where that's an impossibility with a first-round quarterback. I think it's okay to let a quarterback have a chance at least a month or two to sort of figure things out. And I think that would be in his best interest wherever he lands. But physically, you know, I'm sure Kenny Pickett probably would run a faster 40. We didn't see Shador run. He has the same arm as Kenny, probably a little better, I think. I think he's a little he's better in the pocket in terms of feeling pressure, in terms of getting the ball out on time. Those things I feel a little bit better about. But again, I think he's a bottom of the first half quarterback in terms of where he gets drafted, and that's where he may end up going. And the other thing, and you guys know this as well as I do, first-round pick quarterbacks work out 45% of the time. So if you take two and you love Cam Ward and you're taking the second guy, chances are it's not going to be as good an outcome for you had you had the first overall pick.
Where do you overall rank Sanders as a prospect in this draft, Ryan?
He on my big board.
Yep.
Positions aside, he is 25th. Okay, he's right behind Mykal Williams, the edge rusher out of Georgia, and just ahead of Malachi Starks, the safety out of Georgia.
So he's 25th overall for you. Do you agree with this comparison to Pickett? Sanders is a high floor, low ceiling quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I actually think he's more so than Kenny because I wasn't sure how high Kenny's floor was. We knew he was older. But I didn't see as much progress in Kenny as I saw in Shador. And the other thing is he was playing FCS up until 2 years ago, and that transition, I was guilty of it at least in 2023 when Colorado started 3-0 and the way that Shador was playing. I was like, this guy, certainly this is what a first-round pick looks like. And then we've had a year and a half to sort of have those the full circle conversations about how these kids stack up.
Ryan, again, a thing that bugs me about Sanders, not so much about him personally, but about the way he's being looked at by the rest of the league. We know Cam Ward's a Titan already in all but, you know, the official announcement. There are still three teams ahead of the Steelers in the draft, the Saints, the Browns, the Giants, who all need a quarterback just as badly, if not worse, than the Steelers. None of them seem likely to take this player, and that just has me leery that if teams that also need a quarterback picking before you aren't going to pick the guy, how good really can we expect him to be? How good of a prospect is he? Because if he was a great one or a better one than he is, one of them would snap him up. And I guess one of them might, but that doesn't seem to be the way it's trending.
Yeah, they're not going to with those first three picks. So the other way you can look at it, if you want to be a little glass half full about it, to make yourself feel a little better, if the Steelers were afforded the ability to take Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, or Shador Sanders, they're taking Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter. They just don't have that luxury because they refuse to lose more games than they win and get a better draft position. The other thing to keep in mind, and I haven't talked to anyone about this, but just common sense thinking about it, is that Cleveland's going to take Travis at 2 unless they trade out. I don't think they're going to trade out. They could very easily, and by very easily, I mean it would cost them pick 67, move from 33 to 20 and leapfrog the Steelers and get Shador, because we keep hearing how Shador, what's he going to look like without Travis Hunter? Well, you can solve that problem by getting both of those players. So it only would cost them a third-round pick if they do, in fact, want to get back up. We've already talked about Jackson Dart slipping a little bit. So that's a possibility. It might make you feel a little better. So that's also in the realm of things that could happen on Thursday night. But it's trending towards Shador. That's how it feels right now.
Ryan, we had a Steelers insider, Nick Faribault from PennLive.com on yesterday. He's been at more pro days, combine, Senior Bowl than anybody on the Steelers beat. And he had heard at the NFL owners meetings, I believe, that Derek Harmon has injury or medical red flags that are either scaring some teams off or have some teams worried about his medical, and that there's a chance he slips in the draft on Thursday because of it. Have you heard that at all?
I have not heard that, but what I've talked to teams about this, the sort of second point. I was never big on Derek Harmon as a first-round pick, and Jordan Burch, his teammates, he plays outside. I didn't love his tape necessarily that much as a top 40 guy, but a name to keep in mind, I have to check, but I can't remember if the Steelers had this young man in or not, but Jamari Caldwell, their teammate, plays nose tackle.
They did.
Yeah, so he doesn't look the part. He plays the part. He doesn't look like Jordan Burch or Harmon getting off the bus, but there's an opportunity for him to go on day two and shock some people. I had not heard that about Harmon. The
so
injury.
Why aren't you a Harmon guy at 21 then, Ryan? Tell us why.
I describe him as a slow burn, and by that I mean I had to watch a ton of tape to sort of get an idea of who he's supposed to be, where you can watch Jamari Caldwell win three reps in a row. Oh, that's what that guy can do. He looks like he just rolled off the softball field, but he plays like, Cam Hayward. So that's the trade-off. And Derek Harmon looks the part, but I was like waiting for him to do something. You can see glimpses of it, but it's a lot easier to see it with Caldwell, his teammate.
Are you hearing anything? Do you get the sense? We haven't heard, every team still has their current pick in the first round. It never happens this late. Do you expect the Steelers to try to be active traders on any night of the draft based on what you're hearing, Ryan?
Well, they don't have a second-round pick, so that's a huge problem. Otherwise, they may try to – I don't know. It feels like it's a year where they're going to have to wait and see what these comp picks look like, because they're going to get a ton of those next year, and they just may have to sort of eat crow, as it were, and just take the guys that fall to them, because they need a ton of things, and you don't want to move down too far and miss out on a running back, for example, in the third round, or a wide receiver, because those guys are going to get taken up pretty quickly. Cornerback's the same thing. So it might be a situation where, unless you're willing to come out capital next year, a second-round pick, for example, to move back into round two, you might just want to wait and see what happens.
Ryan, I'm going to give you a list of players at a position of need for the Steelers where they had guys in for a visit. And from the list, you tell me, among the Steelers' picks, they've got their first, their third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, where it would make the most sense to pick one of these players and why. Okay, so running back we'll do first. You've got DJ Giddens from K-State, Amarian Hampton from North. Well, we'll leave Hampton out because we're going under the assumption that Sanders is the first-round pick. So Giddens from K-State, Sampson, Tennessee, Tooten, Virginia Tech, Ollie Gordon, Oak State, Jaden Blue, Texas, Caleb Johnson, Iowa, R.J. Harvey, UCF, Trayvon Henderson, Ohio State. All of those guys were here. Perfect world. Who would they take and where?
Ollie Gordon feels like what they want in a sort of a post-Najee Harris type player to complement what Jalen Warren brings to the table, and even Kenneth Gainwell. And you can get him fifth, sixth round, and that feels like a bargain. He's going to be a workhorse between the tackles guy. Not a ton of mileage. Didn't have a down year last year, but I think he's worthy of that. And that feels like the best value. Jaden Blue is a burner. He has fumbling problems, which concern me a little bit. But Ollie Gordon's going to run through arm tackles if that's what you want in terms of change of pace.
All right. Three wide receivers, Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins from Iowa State and Savion Williams from TCU.
Savion Williams is going to be Cordell Patterson 2.0 when he was, you know, a little younger, and that sort of versatility, because he was a wide receiver converted to running back. So Arthur Smith could do something with that. I would lean towards probably Jalen Noel. I think Jaden Higgins is doubling up on what Pickens and DK Metcalf give you, but not as explosive. Jalen Noel's a slot guy who's making a little run up the old draft boards here when you talk to teams that like him.
What round would that be?
Let's be optimistic and hope he's there in the fourth.
All right, defensive tackles. So we're going to leave Harmon out because we're going again with Sanders as the first-round pick. You have Donnie's guy, J.J. Pegues from Ole Miss, Yaha Black from Iowa, Jared Harrison Hunt from SMU, Joshua Farmer, Florida State, Elijah Roberts, SMU, Darius Alexander, Toledo, and your guy Caldwell from Oregon.
Those are I would stay away, and I've heard the Steelers like Yaya Black a lot. He had a terrible Senior Bowl, and I did not love his tape. He has 35-inch arms, which is great, but he didn't put it all together for me. Who's Donnie's guy again? J.J. Pegues. Is that Donnie's guy?
Yeah.
I love him because he scored 7 touchdowns last year running the Wildcat. He's a former tight end, and he's a little juiced up as a developmental guy. He'll be there. Did I say fifth already? Let's take him in the sixth.
Okay.
So I think he has a chance to be there in the sixth.
All right, and then corners is the last one. Azariah Thomas, Florida State, Trey Amos from Ole Miss, and Justin Wally from Minnesota.
Oh, Trey Amos isn't going to be there because they don't have a second-round pick. So I'll go with Thomas, who didn't have a great Senior Bowl, but he feels like the exact sort of physical corner you want opposite Joey Porter Jr. Wally's a good player, more inside, but I would take in the third Thomas, and hopefully you keep your fingers crossed because he ran a 4.57 that he's still there, plays much faster than that.
All right. Ryan Wilson, we'll see how many of these draft predictions come true. We'll be glued to your coverage all week long, Ryan, and we'll talk and recap the draft next week. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
There you go, Ryan Wilson.
I keep hoping that it's just lying season right now and that we are not going to get what it seems like momentum is building towards us getting, which is with the 21st pick in the 2025 NFL draft, the Pittsburgh Steelers select Shador Sanders.
Why is Goodell so glum when he announces it in your hypothetical?
I'm glum. I'm being glum Goodell because I'm putting Chris Muller into Roger Goodell's like mind frame. I'm reading the pick as Roger Goodell, so I'm pissed off, which makes everyone wonder why Goodell isn't doing his usual routine.
He's putting a little pissed off Paul Tagliabue in there.
Tagliabue
used to get upset if he had to like deliver trade.
We've got a trade. It's a complicated one. You'll find out more later.
We're watching the 98 draft today, which is one of the historic ones where Manning goes first and Leaf goes second and Randy Moss slides. And it's like the middle of the first round, and Tagliabue's already done. He's already handed it off to like his deputy commissioner.
Yeah, who was the deputy guy who did the Moss pick that year?
It's not like, at least Goodell waits
Tagliabue
until the first
gets
round
a glass
is up.
Of warm milk and he's like, I'm done. I'm tapping.
Oh, he gets out of there early.
I think Goodell, you know what? I think Goodell realizes that doing all the big bro hugs and letting these guys kind of like manhandle him makes him look cool. And so he continues it for that exact reason.
That music means it's time for Donnie's football segment. It's called the Donnie Football Debrief. And of course, it's sponsored because it's so popular. Brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience. Don?
The Debrief. April 22, 2025. Unfortunately, a sad one today. The passing of Mike Patrick, the former college football and NFL broadcaster. My upbringing with him was Sunday Night Football on ESPN when I was a kid before it changed over to NBC. He also, notably, being a West Virginia fan and native, he called the infamous 13-9 game, which I'm going to give the guy a lot of credit here. He had to see his favorite team go down in flames that night.
Called it like a pro.
Couldn't really tell that the guy gave a hoot about West Virginia whatsoever.
Put the game and the stakes and the magnitude of the upset that was brewing in front of him ahead of his personal feelings.
Kind of a underrated all-time football announcer.
Great big game voice. You know what? I think this is the test I run. If you heard Mike Patrick's voice, especially in an NFL game, you knew you were watching a big-ass game that people cared about. He wasn't doing any, like, Jags-Texans when both teams are, you know, 8 games under .500. That ain't Mike Patrick's bag.
You get Mike Patrick, Paul McGuire, Joe Theismann in the booth.
Yep. This is Patrick quoted in 2022 in an article about the Backyard Brawl returning, calling that game 13-9, quote, I hated Pitt. Before I knew what Pitt was, he attended his first Backyard Brawl in 1959 at age 15, and 15 years later he called that game. Quote, it was going to be the best game I've ever done. Personally, it turned out to be the worst. I waited my whole life, my whole career for it. It's a good thing I didn't have a permit to carry a gun. I don't know that I would have made it out of the stadium that night. What a quote.
Guess he did take it pretty tough. But to Donnie's point, you didn't hear it on the broadcast.
Holy crap.
Pony, if you're in that position, you're broadcasting the game, you're play-by-play Pony, it's Syracuse. Sure, throw Pitt. Who would you hate to lose to the most if you're a Syracuse fan? That could realistically keep you like...
And we're talking football now?
Yeah, like it's got to be a situation where you have a big conference rival who might keep you from the national title. Who would it be?
Man, I mean, back in the day, it was probably like a Miami or Virginia Tech for me. But
you've
obviously,
be
things have changed so much.
You've got to be favored, though.
Yeah.
Say it's
and favored by like four touchdowns.
Yeah, say it's Syracuse
that.
Favored by four TDs over like the worst version of Miami anyone's ever seen.
Or like Rutgers or Temple back then.
Rutgers is a good one, too. And you have to call this game. It's going to be your crowning achievement. The Cuse is going to win the game, go to the national title where they are a very live team to win it all. And then you watch, I don't know, Mike Teal engineer a big upset and take Rutgers over the Cuse in the dome.
More from
how
Mike,
are you doing that game?
More from Mike Patrick on that game. I waited until everyone left the press box before I slipped into a side room, closed the door, and screamed at the top of my lungs.
He took it hard, man.
I got to give myself credit. During the game, I held it in.
That had to be excruciating for him.
Yeah. Clarksburg, West Virginia native.
You guys would remember better than I, because I was like, I remember being in Westchester, Pennsylvania at that time, like kind of bar hopping maybe with my then girlfriend and her friends.
Sure,
and
congratulations
so,
on all your sex life success.
I'm getting phone updates from my brother about the game.
Congratulations on having technology back then.
That one doesn't even work. It was 2007.
What do you mean? It was not easy to get updates back then.
He was just text messaging me going, hey, this is the score. Hey, you won't believe
well,
this.
Well, service wasn't a guarantee in every spot
oh my
back
God.
Then.
Anyway, Donnie, do you remember, do either of you remember, he was such a big West Virginia fan. It was also, for unbiased observers, not just Pitt fans, some of the calls that went against Pitt were like so obviously...
Oh, Pitt should have won the game by
more than
10 points.
Trying to drag West Virginia back into the
100%.
Game. Shady McCoy, easy touchdown run, random phantom holding. Do you guys remember, was Patrick even like acknowledging, ooh, that seemed like a pretty soft call?
I feel like it was.
Yeah, he was. I feel like he called the game right down the middle.
I think that's unbelievably impressive. In his mind, he's got to be going, hell yeah, throw that flag, screw Pitt, to call it down the middle when you desperately want the team getting the benefit of the calls to win and just saying, that's a bad call right there. I give the guy a ton of credit for that.
What is the quintessential Steelers Sunday night football game before Sunday night football became a big thing? 2005, maybe? 2006?
I think 2006 was when it changed over.
Cordell against the Ravens, wasn't that Sunday night? He throws the 90-yarder to Bobby Shaw.
I don't know why,
but that was a Sunday night.
I think of that first game when the Browns came back.
Okay, in 99. Nothing. Yeah, Chris Palmer standing there in his big starter jacket.
Would, funny enough, lose to the Browns later that year.
Phil Dawson.
Yep.
You know, a game that I think of probably because it was right in my wheelhouse, it was that rookie Benyer. They played Jacksonville. They always had battles with Jacksonville around those times. The Jags are wearing those all-black unis
that look
pretty badass.
Good look.
Yep.
And they were seconds away from knocking Ben off and giving him his first NFL loss. He drives the Steelers down the field with like 30 seconds to go, and here comes old Jeff Reed.
I honestly would go just for my own sake because I remember thinking, wow, Cordell figured it out. The Sunday nighter in Baltimore. The Ravens weren't a great team, but they came into that game 8-4. The Steelers came in 10-2. And to just put a fork in Baltimore the way they did with the Shaw touchdown, getting up two scores in the fourth quarter, and then kind of cruising to the finish, I thought was pretty cool.
Donnie, thank you for another Donnie Football Debrief.
God, Cordell cooked in that game. 20-31, 333, two tutties, 55 rushing yards.
How about
yards.
The,
good
it was
Lord.
Also a Sunday night. I think it was the year before they drafted Ben. They ran that fake punt with Josh Miller.
That's right.
Thrown to Chris Hope.
That was the 0-3 finale.
Donnie, quick test. I know Pony knows this. Pony, don't answer. Who was Baltimore's starting quarterback in that game I'm talking about? 26-21 Steelers win in December 16th, 2021. Or 2001, excuse me.
I want to say like Tony Banks.
Is it Elvis Gerback affair?
It was Gerback!
Come on, man.
Man, I should have gone down the Gerback well.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
If you love your customers, you have to try RingCentral. No matter the size of your business, every call, every text, every meeting, every customer conversation matters. With RingCentral, you get a reliable business phone, a modern contact center, and built-in AI across every conversation, so you can focus on the moments that matter. See for yourself at ringcentral.com.
RingCentral, intelligent communications you can trust.